You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This.
I'm a peacock! You gotta let me fly!
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
That is it! North Carolina will go to the Final Four!
Peacocks don't fly!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I know I'm great!
But let me just express to everybody out there who does not root for Duke, it is a wild watch.
Today's guests from NBC Sports, Peter King, host of Peacock's Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, CBS Sports broadcaster Ian Eagle, and now it's Rich Eisen.
All righty then. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show here on a rainy Los Angeles Monday. So pray for us because people do not know how to drive in this weather around here. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on this very busy Monday. We say hello to our Peacock audience, NBC Sports on Peacock. We say hello to our NBC Sports Audio Sirius XM audience on Channel 85, the Rich Eisen Show Terrestrial Radio Network audience coast to coast, anybody listening on Odyssey with their streaming Eargate. We appreciate your listenership. And then, of course, our podcast listeners, whenever they darn well please, you can get our podcast every single day, all 3 hours on the Cumulus Podcast Network or where every single podcast can be acquired. You can't miss us, so check us out whenever you want. And there's our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. That is, as our friend who precedes us every single day here on NBC Sports on Peacock and NBC Sports Audio, Sirius XM Channel 85 might say, en fuego. So we appreciate everybody who hits that subscribe button to our YouTube page. DJ Mikey D, how are you, sir? Good to see you.
I'm good. I have a single today.
Yes, so you
I'm
do. And everybody who sees us on NBC Sports on Peacock, just smile and just look deeply into the audience and thank Chris Brockman for being in Mexico with his lovely significant other and child. So Brockman with an empty chair, which is quite an image. I think he's also breaking up a fight somewhere, a slap fight. That happened here in Los Angeles, California. We'll be talking about that at length today. Good to see you, TJ Jefferson.
Hey, Rich.
Light the candle.
If you had told me that someone was going to get slapped at the Oscars last night and 50 Cent wasn't involved, I'd have said, no way.
You took the over on that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So we'll hit on all that here today, here on the Rich Eisen Show. And so the Final Four is set. Isn't it amazing that we watched the tournament for those shining moments, the multiple shining moments, and how, you know, it's a journey and how everybody looks for Cinderella to emerge. And we actually get one. We actually get one in the St. Peter's Peacocks and Shaheen Holloway, who had us at hello the day after he busted up my bracket, beating Kentucky in the first round of the tournament. And a 15 seed makes it all the way to the Elite Eight, bouncing Murray State and Purdue in the process, you know? And it's just great to watch, and it's great to see these guys go as deeply as they go. And every single year we look for that, Loyola Chicago or Oral Roberts or UMBC bouncing Virginia, and that's the stuff that we talk about, Princeton, you know, Tigers with Pete Carrill back in the day, right? And that's what we talk about and the magical journeys. And this year, like I said, we got one in St. Peter's. But then the Elite Eight happened. And everybody that was looking for a Cinderella story like the Arkansas Razorbacks bouncing Duke, or somehow, some way, Miami pulling off that run in its first Elite Eight appearance against Kansas. Could Houston, whose coach we spoke to last week, and Kelvin Sampson talking about losing two players from last year's Final Four team in December, making it to back-to-back Final Fours against a Villanova team that just basically plays six. So, but it's tough to call Villanova a Cinderella story when they're ranked second and so recently dominant in this tournament. And then, of course, there's St. Peter's against North Carolina, which, you know, is maybe a Cinderella story because they're ranked eighth. They were seeded eighth and didn't have such a terrific regular season, but they're still North Carolina. And everybody turned into a pumpkin over the weekend. And so here we now have a Final Four. We're set for a Final Four that may be the bluest of the blue bloods we have seen in quite some time. And I'm not talking about Carolina Blue and Blue Devils. And everybody's got blue in their logos. I mean,
yes, indeed.
So there's blue everywhere, but it's the Blue Bloods. This is your Final Four, folks. When it all comes down to it, we're looking for those Cinderella stories. You've got Kansas, who's now, with their win over the weekend, they now are the winningest team in the history of college basketball.
Correct.
2,354 wins. All time. It's their 16th Final Four visit.
Rock chop.
Taking on a Villanova team that, again, as I mentioned, they are no doubt about it, you know, shorthanded, and they lost Justin Moore to an Achilles injury that happened in the final seconds of the game. Villanova's won two of the last five titles. Okay?
Yeah.
And in that span, they're 20-3 in the tournament. Think about that. 20-3 in the NCAA tournament.
Oof.
In this span in which they've won two of the last five titles.
20.
And so basically they're averaging going to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Over the last several years. Four wins will get you to the Final Four. And then you've got Duke, the winningest coach in the history of the NCAA, now with 101 career tournament wins, making his 13th Final Four, breaking the tie for most such appearances by a college coach with John Wooden. He now has 13, Baker's dozen, Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah.
In his, by the way, first Final Four appearance, though, out of the West. He's now completed the grand slam of regional final wins. Taking on UNC with the win over St. Peter's gives them the most tournament wins ever, 130 of those, and their 21st trip to the Final Four, most above any program ever. So you got the winningest coach of all time, the winningest program of all time, the winningest NCAA tournament program of all time, because North Carolina's got 130 of those. That's the most of all time. The program with the most Final Four trips of all time against a coach who's got the most Final Four trips of any coach of all time. And Hubert Davis of North Carolina is the only coach in the Final Four who's not in the Hall of Fame. Bill Self's in it, Krzyzewski's in it, and Jay Wright just got in it. That's your Final Four.
Against the most successful program of the last 5 years.
Correct.
Yeah.
So this is like they're just hitting the penthouse button. They're just going straight. They're going on that elevator that goes straight to the top.
Yes, indeed.
And then, though, on top of it, for cherry on top, is the first ever Duke-UNC meeting in the history of the NCAA tournament. It's never happened before. Both teams have made a Final Four together before 1991, but they didn't face each other. It's the first time they're facing each other in the NCAA tournament, and not only that, it's crazy. In the Final Four and can be the last game of Mike Krzyzewski's career, so Carolina can not only add to beating Duke and Coach K in his final Cameron Indoor appearance, they could just end the whole thing now again, you can't make up. This is akin to, it's obvious, Packers-Bears in an NFC Championship game, Yankees-Red Sox in an ALCS. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, Eastern Conference Finals between Celtics and Sixers?
Celtics-Sixers, yep.
Right?
I mean,
this is we're entering bad blood, hatred, long-standing rivalry territory in a Final Four. Whole country's going to watch, and it could be Mike Krzyzewski's last game. Just end it. We not for Carolina to basically say to Duke fans, we not only ended Coach K's tenure in Cameron Indoor by spoiling the complete party and having him bark at the audience on his day in front of 90-plus returning alums, but we're also going to see you in the Final Four, and we'll just end it entirely. We'll just wrap it up. And then, of course, Duke can somewhat, you can't erase what happened in Cameron Indoor, but you kind of can basically say, well, when it all comes down to it.
When it really mattered.
When it really mattered to keep Coach K's career going one more game into the final for them the right to cut down a net to wrap it all up and send him off into retirement with the ultimate. They got this done. Honestly, Kansas versus Villanova is an outstanding matchup.
It's going to be a great game.
But it's the undercard.
Oh, no doubt. We have a definite
main event. Is the undercard of all undercards. You know, like it's an amazing story, something that deserves everything to talk about. It is a long, long time coming for, you know, fans, I guess, of anybody who's been wanting to see this matchup in a way, I guess. But might be a lot of those. But just in terms of worthiness, people are into it, should be talked about, but won't be. Villanova versus Kansas is essentially Questlove winning his Oscar. But nobody's really talking about that because of the bright, shiny other object.
Questlove couldn't even really talk about it.
We'll talk about that later on. But that's just my two cents on how it all went down in the Final Four over the weekend. Iron Eagle, who called St. Peter's UNC, and is just fantastic. He's so great. Also, voice of the Brooklyn Nets as the Eastern Conference and the NBA season is coming to a crescendo. He will join us in hour number three. We've got two football guests on the brain here today. Why not? Because football is our passion. And the owners' meeting begins today. All 32 teams and all 32 owners and all 32 general managers, most are all there. Actually, Mike McCarthy's not there. For Dallas. He stayed back to do other things.
He's got some scouting to do.
Is that what he's doing? He's grinding tape.
You know, he's watching plays.
He's grinding every game that the Cowboys have done. But he's not there.
Well, he's got more important things.
And
Uncle Jerry's there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
he is indeed there.
He's representing.
And so, the big news coming out of the owners' meeting is going to be whether they change the overtime rules. You know how I feel about it. I say leave it. And if you're going to mess with it, just we have hashed it all out. We have an idea. I don't think it's not in front of the membership. There's only two overtime rules that will be placed in front of the membership, which is what they call the owners. And one I don't think has a shot in hell of passing, and another one might. The one that doesn't have a shot in hell of passing is the Titans' idea that once overtime is played, first team scores a touchdown in order to wrap it up completely and not give the other team a chance, which is what we're trying to fix. They have to go for two. And if they make it, it's over. Problem is, if they go for two and don't make it, the other team has a chance to match mm-hmm. and just kick an extra point and win it. So what team is going to actually take the ball, go down the field, and go for two just to wrap it up?
The Ravens.
Well, I mean, the Titans might do it too. Yeah. But even if the Chiefs had done that against the Bills, because, again, we all know this is the impetus of trying to change the rule is because we saw a dynamic matchup of two of the best quarterbacks this league has had to offer against each other in a playoff game in a long time. And one of them in Josh Allen didn't get a shot to win it because their defense, their, you know, coach and special teams didn't squib it with 13 seconds to go, gave an extra opportunity and snap to the Chiefs, who took it and went down the field, kicked a field goal, forced overtime, won the coin toss, went down the field, scored. Josh Allen staring at space and the Bills lose.
See ya.
And we said, don't change anything. Next week, the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game are in overtime again. It's the opponent that forced it, coming back from 18 down. They win the coin toss, get the ball first, and the Bengals stop them, pick them off, win the game. Chef's kiss for all of us out there saying, don't change it. Very next week, the coin toss didn't decide it. It was the Bengals that decided it with their defense and their hot kicker who didn't miss in the playoffs. So I don't like that idea at all. I think it's too gimmicky. I know owners won't go for it. Anything that's too gimmicky, they won't go for it, which is, again, the idea that we also like, that you, instead of an onside kick, you give a team an option to go for it one time from their own, 30-yard line or something like that, or 40-yard line, a 4th and 15, one shot to try and get 15 yards to try and get the ball back. Love that idea. Owners are like, pound sand, get out of here. You know, send that to our football-loving wrestling friends. You know, that's nonsense. The other idea is the Colts and the Eagles have gotten together and said, well, just go ahead and make sure both teams touch it. I have a problem with that because now you're not going to want the ball to start overtime. You're going to want it second. You want to know what you have to match. And the other team who gets it first, it's going to be a hell of a lot more, you know, careful or risk averse than the team that knows I have to score a touchdown. So I'm going to go for it on 4th down from my own 20-yard line like I'm playing a video game. Which is something the team that gets the ball first will not have the benefit of doing. They're going to have to play it straight. And then once they get inside the 15-yard line, maybe just have to settle for your 3. And then the other team who gets it second is going to have the opportunity. There's so many unintended consequences. I don't like it either. Just keep it straight up. Like Mike Tomlin wants. This is what the coach of the Steelers said today. Because, again, all AFC coaches speak today. All NFC coaches who are at the owners' meeting speaks tomorrow. This is what Tomlin had to say about this, and he's very influential with the competition committee.
To be quite honest with you, I'm a sudden death advocate.
Like old school.
I'm a traditionalist. I don't fear sudden death, and I never have. But obviously, I lost that battle a decade ago. But my position remains unchanged. I am one of the few sudden death advocates, I would imagine.
He's just like, screw it. You beat my defense, go down the field. He is the embodiment of the idea, if you want to make sure you do not lose merely because the team that is starting with the ball won a coin toss and has so much momentum, don't forget about that, the momentum, that you still have the opportunity to stop them. Mm-hmm. If you call heads and it comes up heads to start overtime, guess what? Game doesn't end just because you got the coin toss right. You still have to score. And Tomlin's like, I'll take those odds. I'll put my team out there. And a lot of fans might be like, yeah, well, that sounds ridiculous. Yeah. Because how many times do we see a team just get the coin toss and go down the field? My two cents, don't touch it. But if you do, the one idea that we came up with through a caller is that you tie the opening kickoff coin toss to whoever gets the ball first, whether you want it first or if you defer and give it to the team to start the game first. If you get it first, you then also get it to start overtime. Or if you want to even mess with if you win the coin toss,
you get the choice.
You also get the choice to start in overtime, whether you want the ball or not. So there's nothing random about it, except at the very beginning of the game. And then You then know who's going to have the decision to either kick it off or keep it to start overtime in advance. I think people just get caught up on how random it is with the game on the line and being tied and everybody spilled their guts out on the field. Now the coin's in the air.
Yeah. I like that, though.
That's our idea. Peter King is going to call in to talk about it. His Football Morning in America column had a ton on this. And he seems to think that the general sense at the owners' meeting is that this is just going to pass. They're just going to say, screw it, both teams touch it, and we'll figure out how it works from there on out. But in the playoffs only, not the regular season. So it'll be something that gets popped open, uncorked, just in time for the playoffs. I don't like it. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. What do you think about all of this? We're off and running here on this Brockmanless, much quieter than normal edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We're back with Peter King in a moment, right here on NBC Sports on Peacock and the rest of our Rich Eisen Show audience here on this busy Monday.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Peter King is a great friend and love when this man has the time to call into this program. And he joins us here on the Rich Eisen Show, Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line, fresh off of yet another must-read Football Morning in America column on NBC Sports and Pro Football Talk. Mike Florio joining us later. But right now, I say hello to Peter King on this Monday. How are you, sir?
Hey, Rich, everything's okay. How about you?
I'm glad to hear that. Very much so. So let's just jump right into it because I was fascinated by your column today and what you wrote about the overtime rule. And what do you think has a chance of passing once it's placed in front of the membership tomorrow, Peter?
I think it's a pretty big mystery, Rich, but I think those, you know, I talked to one top team executive who thought it was going to pass easily. And the rule, obviously, that we're talking about is each team getting one possession in overtime minimum. And if after the second possession the game is tied, then starting with the third possession, it's sudden death. And so the NFL, I think most of the people on the competition committee are in favor of the rule being changed to that so that both teams would get a possession in overtime or be guaranteed a possession, because in the 10 years since the overtime rule has been enacted, essentially what has happened is there have been 12 games in the playoffs that have gone to overtime, and in 10 of those games, the team that won the coin toss to start the overtime has won the game. 7 of those 10 games were won on the first possession of overtime. So in 7 of those 12 games, the other team, the coin toss loser, never saw the ball. And so, Rich, but I think what is happening here is that overtime, and look, I've been, you know, covering the league since the 80s, and usually what you find is that it's not very easy to get 24 owners to agree on anything. It's not quite the current House of Representatives or the Senate with the Republican-Democrat divide, but there's a little bit of that in here that people need to be bashed over the head to change a rule. So I'm not sure that there are 24 right now. And the two things that make me a little bit hesitant, number one, Roger Goodell has not stated his preference for this rule. He's kind of holding his cards close to the vest, hasn't said what he favors right now. Usually when he tries to push through a rule, it gets pushed through. And number two, I also think there are people who say, hey, look, it's not been a horrible issue in all games, including regular season games. It's only been bad in the playoffs. So why would we change a rule that really has not been terrible during the regular season, but just has been one-sided in the playoffs? And that's why my belief is that owners will do one of two things. They will either vote to change the rule for all games so that, you know, in the regular season and postseason, the rule will be changed so that both teams will get one possession, or they will withdraw the, if they don't think they have the votes, the 24 votes to win that, they'll withdraw and they'll basically say, okay, let's attempt this year just to do it for the postseason and then maybe try to do it again in the future. So that's kind of the way I see it going.
Well, I mean, let's just, you know, hash this out, Peter, because the last time anytime a rule is proposed and it's changed, everyone talks about what are the unintended consequences that will be born out of this rule change. And I'm just wondering if there might be some hesitancy on this rule change just merely because the last time there was a major to-do born out of a playoff game that a rule change was instituted, it was a total disaster in making instant a reviewable play out of pass interference. And right. and again, that's an apple and this is an orange that we're talking about. But still, the idea is to make a rule change that is significant enough based on a playoff moment. And I'm just wondering, what are the unintended consequences that are being discussed? Because the way I look at it, I wouldn't want the ball first. Now, you're basically giving anybody who gets the ball first in overtime, you're kind of flipping it. I'd want to know exactly what I need to do. And I want to know exactly what I need to do because I could be a hell of a lot more aggressive than the team that gets the ball first because of it, you know? So how does that fix anything?
I totally agree with you. I think that most teams, if both teams are guaranteed a possession to start overtime, I think it could do a couple of things, neither of which is bad. Number one, it could obviously, I think most teams will defer. Most, if not all, will defer because obviously if you win the coin toss, theoretically you should get some small advantage, theoretically, and that would seem to me to be that you would possess the ball second. I think the strategic things, rather than talking about unintended bad consequences, I think there are some cool strategic things. Number one, if let's just say that you win the toss and you defer. And so team A now, who gets the ball first, they score a touchdown and they say, okay, well, geez, we got Patrick Mahomes on the other side. So what we're going to do is we're going to head him off at the pass. We're going for two right now. So let's say they go for two and make it. So now Kansas City gets the ball, team B, and they have to go and score a touchdown and get a two-point conversion, and then, you know, the first team is going to get the ball back if indeed that's how it happens. But I think there's a lot of things that could happen if this rule is passed, but none of them are remotely as egregious in terms of basic fairness to say that, you know, in the last 4 years we have seen Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills be on the wrong end of the coin toss and not get a chance to touch the ball in overtime. And we have seen Patrick Mahomes against Tom Brady in 2018 not get a chance to possess the ball, even though Kansas City in that particular game was hot as a firecracker. And so those are the things that, in my opinion, Rich, are worse than any strategical things that would come about, changing this rule.
I hear you, Peter, but I don't know. I mean, so we heard Tomlin basically say...
Here's a question. In the last 36 overtime games, the last 36,
yes,
the team that won the toss elected to receive the ball. The last time a team won the toss and elected to defer and to defend a goal was Mike Tomlin in 2019 when Duck Hodges was his quarterback and he was playing a great defense, the Baltimore Ravens, which is totally understandable. But 36 times in a row, the coin flip determined who got a huge advantage in a game, which is getting the ball first, and if you score a touchdown, the game is over. In my opinion,
yes,
I don't understand why that doesn't lend to more, I don't even want to say outrage, but the sense of unfair play and the sense of influence that the silly flip of a coin has on huge football games.
Well, and the silly flip of a coin that happens right after 60 minutes is played and blood, sweat, and tears have been spilled, and now we're in a whole different ball of wax strategically, clockwise. That the toss is then done there. The idea that one of the callers to this show, Peter, came up with that I really dig a lot is that you tie the opening coin toss of the game to whether you get the decision to in overtime. So if you win the opening coin toss and you defer, you're giving the ball to start overtime to your opponent. You know. And then you don't mandate both teams touch it, and you play it out just the way it goes. And, you know, if you lose, it's just like, well, then you're the one who gave them the ball to start, and we've known that for 3.5 real-time hours. So we're not sitting there shocked at, oh, God, that just happened. It's just like, well, that's on you because you wanted to defer. You wanted the ball to start the second half. You've coughed that up, and you just play it out. You know, because again, I just find that we're just going to be moving the deck chairs. We're just going to be complaining about something else. Like, well, of course that team won because they knew they had to go for it. They had to go for it on 4th and 3 from their own 33-yard line, which the team that gets the ball to start overtime wouldn't have to do. Of course they're going to punt it and play for another day because they have the ability to, you know, the team that gets it second can play it a totally different way than the team that gets it first. That's why I don't like it. You know, like we're just going to be talking about something completely else. That's all.
But what's more unjust? What is more unjust? What you saw happen to when the defenses in these two games,
yes,
that I bring up mostly.
Yes.
The Kansas City New England AFC Championship game and then the Kansas City Buffalo divisional game.
Yes.
In both of those games,
yes,
you know, offenses have changed in football. Some of them are so incredibly overpowering that they have just beaten up the opposing defense the whole game. And so what happens is you get to overtime, and why do you think anything is going to be different? After Kansas City has scored 36 points against Buffalo during regulation, how do you have any hope that Buffalo is going to stop them in overtime? I mean, and conversely, you know, the Chiefs were getting track meted by Tom Brady, and so was New England's defense by Mahomes. My only point in all this, and Rich, I don't mind that. Your thought about the coin flip or whoever came up with that.
Right.
I guess what I say is, you know how owners are.
Right.
People who get proposed something like that coin flip rule, they're just going to say, it's too complicated for me. I don't want to deal with it. Or, I don't like it. I don't like it. It doesn't make sense. It's all this. All I'm saying is we're going to argue about this stuff and what you like and don't like. And then, you know, so nothing gets done. And then there's going to be the same rule that prevents basic fairness in a football game, which is, if it wasn't that big a deal, the coin flip, why have 36 coaches in a row all chosen to take the ball when they win the flip to start overtime? And that, to me, is the madness. We're gonna argue over all these various things instead of just saying, okay, I don't love this one, but it's better than the current system, so let's at least get this one, and then let's try to see if we can get owners to see that, hey, the coin flip at the start of the game, that's going to dictate what could start overtime. So, you know, that's all I'm saying, that there can be all kinds of great ideas, but a great idea is not necessarily an idea that's going to pass muster with 24 of 32 owners.
And before I let you go, Peter King, part of your column was that the Browns owners aren't really having rose petals thrown at their feet at the Breakers Hotel, right, upon their arrival for the owners' meeting.
I mean,
right now?
You know, I think everybody is going to be cordial to the Haslams, to Jimmy and Dee Haslam, because they're cordial people. But I think that not only are there a lot of owners and a lot of club people who think that it's gross to pay a guy the biggest contract in NFL history when he's got 22 civil cases involving sexual impropriety hanging over his head. And, you know, it's also, I wouldn't say gross, but in the attempt to justify it, you know, what, there is no justification. At least, look, I'm different than a lot of people in this. I don't think there's any justification for this. There are times in life when you say, gee, I'd love to have that bright, shiny object, but it costs $8 jillion and there's something basically wrong here. Instead of saying, we'll give you $230 million, it'd be far better to say, hey, listen, let's see what happens when all these cases are adjudicated. And if we lose you because of that, if we don't get you, then that's the way it goes. But we would rather have our honor than make a business decision like this, which there's not a soul in the world who can tell anybody that this is all going to turn out roses. This is a risky play by the Haslams and by the Cleveland Browns. We'll see how it goes, but I just think there's a lot of people in the league who object, who think that it's amoral to have done this.
And not just that. I mean, I'm just talking about as well that, you know, I'm sure Kyler Murray's negotiation, whatever the state of play was between he and the Cardinals, that changed the minute every guaranteed dollar was every dollar given to Deshaun Watson was guaranteed. I mean, will we ever see a contract again that's not fully guaranteed, right?
To have a contract given to any player that is the greatest contract in NFL history, never mind one with the sword of Damocles hanging over Deshaun Watson's head, is incredible to a lot of people around the league. But you're right. He changed the business for all great quarterbacks in the NFL. There's no question about it. And I think what you're going to see, Rich, and I've talked to a couple of people about this, I think you're going to see, because no one now is going to want to say, like your Patrick Mahomes, okay, we're giving you a 10-year deal and it's all going to be guaranteed. All these contracts now, I think, are going to be shorter because they're going to have to guarantee the money. And the guarantee system in the NFL, in case people don't know, is a real guarantee. You have to put the money up. And so that's Clark Hunt is not going to say, hey, let's put $450 million
in escrow
that's right. for our quarterback. Just not going to happen.
So I guess in the minute I have left with you, what's the quick snapshot of Baker Mayfield? I mean, what, you know, Kevin Stefanski said today he wants it done quick. So
I keep thinking that, you know, what's standing in the way with Baker Mayfield is he's got $18.9 million guaranteed, basically, if somebody picks him up or takes his contract. And why would he give up a dime of that? But if you're Seattle or you're Carolina or you're whoever, and you say, we don't even know if Baker Mayfield's going to be our guy beyond 1 year. I mean, we don't know that right now. We would prefer to spend, and I'm going to make this up, we'd prefer to spend, $7 million on Teddy Bridgewater or someone of that ilk. I mean, we don't want to pay a guy $19 million when we really don't have any idea if he's going to be our guy long term. So I think that is what's standing in the way of Baker Mayfield right now.
Peter King, thanks for the time. Greatly appreciate it. You be well, everyone.
Hey, no problem, Rich. Enjoyed it.
Thank you. Care. Right back at you. At @Peter_King. Everyone should check out his story. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the program. When we come back, okay, let's get into it. I was watching the Oscars last night.
You were?
Dot, dot, dot.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. All right, I'm watching the Oscars, watching it with Zan, watching it with my older son. And Chris Rock comes out, and my first thought to myself as he's starting to make his jokes with Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz, you know, that they're both up for an Oscar. he can't win the Oscar if his wife loses it. Like, that's kind of a funny sort of... A husband-wife joke right there, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, this is the sort of hosting that I kind of miss from this show. And then he makes a joke in the direction of Jada Smith. And as we all know, it was an awful joke. Just terrible. And I think it was ad-libbed, if I had to guess. Like, he saw her.
Yeah,
her,
definitely not
and
a written
as we all
joke.
Know, she's battling with alopecia.
Well,
so she's,
see, no, we all don't know that. Well, see, that's the thing. Okay. We know now. We didn't know that going in.
Bottom line is, okay, it is well known for a bunch of people. And, you know, he takes a shot at her saying that G.I. Jane 2, looking forward to that. And that's a G.I. Jane film. Is Demi Moore with her head shaved. Yeah. And, you know, Will Smith laughs at the joke, and then we see his wife rolling her eyes. And then the next thing, Will Smith's walking up to the stage and slaps Chris Rock. And you heard a noise. And I thought to myself, was that just part of the gag? That's just a gag, right? As Will Smith goes back to his seat. And then... anybody who works in live television knows when a live broadcast dumps out is the phrase that's used in our business, where the live broadcast has a 5-second delay in case there's a bad word that's said. So if you're ever watching a sporting event and all of a sudden the sound goes out, it's because somebody's heard a curse word and they dump out of the sound. But I've never seen dumping out of the sound and the video.
They do both for the Academy Awards, Rich. Well, they do a video, obviously now.
Yeah, you know, I get it.
They definitely
do. But what I'm saying is I've rarely seen this happen. And so when you lose the sound and then the pictures start getting funky, and then one of the shots that you see is Will Smith mouthing the words, and as a sportscaster, you've got to be a professional lip reader. mouthing the words, keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth. And then it cuts out as he's saying mouth. And then all of a sudden, they take Chris Rock, who's now looking off to the side saying, well, that's, you know, that's the greatest exactly. night in the history of television. Mm-hmm. And I sit there and I'm like, you know, Zan's like, what happened? And I'm like,
I don't know.
I think Will Smith hit Chris Rock.
That was my reaction.
I think he hit him. Why, Dad? And I'm like, well, he made a joke. And now I got to explain all this stuff, you know, which is the least of anyone's problems. But it's wild. And I just hit Twitter like, what just happened? Will Smith hit Chris Rock on international live television because what Twitter remarkably can do is people turned around the Australian feed that didn't dump out of anything and the Japanese feed that didn't dump out of anything.
That's the one I got.
And Will Smith sits back down and screams at Chris Rock, you know, keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth. And he's like, you know, wow. Like, you know, Will Smith just slapped the S out of me. And he's saying, you know, it was a joke.
And then Chris Rock
so
was like,
here's the ultimate. Everyone's going to have an opinion on it. Here's mine. Okay.
What's your got, show?
Thank
show.
You.
Yeah,
here's mine. Here's mine. Here's mine. Awful joke. Terrible joke. Rude joke. Beyond the pale. Just falls flat. I don't know what's funny about it. You know, certainly since most people know, he might not have known about her condition. Will Smith laughs at it and might have had one of those moments where, uh-oh, my wife's not terribly happy about it. But for him to sit there in the front row auditorium of an Oscars auditorium and feel, you know, comfortable enough to step up and hit him and sit back down is beyond the pale. And I take the point of view from stand-up comics and stand-up comedy. I'm a former one, you know, from back in my day. I love comedy. I love stand-up comics. Stand-up comics, to be good and successful and for you to go and put money down and enjoy it, you've got to take risks. You have to be risky. And despite how terrible that joke is, you can't go up and hit a comic in the face, slap him. I mean, what if you're going to a comedy club, if you're a stand-up comic right now, you're sitting there thinking, when I go to a comedy club the next time, is somebody just going to step up and hit me because they don't like my joke or they think I'm, you know, you're heckling me or whatever. And, you know, I make fun of your significant other.
But that's definitely happened in random comedy clubs
dude,
around the country.
This, but now this gives a bunch. If again, comics are not happy today about this.
No, they shouldn't be.
And then, you know, his speech about being a vessel of love that happened a few minutes later when he wins the Oscar. It's just insane. Then he apologized to everybody but Chris Rock. Yeah. And I understand you're saying he made fun of his wife, but this is beyond the pale.
Yeah.
So I sat there thinking to myself, and I've heard from people who are in the auditorium where they thought it was a gag until he screamed twice, keep your wife's name out of my effing mouth. Mm-hmm. And he won an Oscar. And unfortunately, Questlove, what a moment for him to win the Best Documentary Oscar yeah. that Chris Rock was presenting, you know, and everybody who's seen Summer of Soul, I didn't see a single damn thing for the Oscars pretty much, except for the short documentary Audible about a deaf football, high school football team. It's a beautiful short doc, but for, yeah, I'm a fan of Questlove and for him to win it, nope. Nobody's remembering this. It's because Will Smith slapped Chris Rock. And then during Will Smith's acceptance speech, the Oscars logo pops up several times. And I think it's because one of the Williams sisters was suffering a wardrobe malfunction.
First, I thought, like, ooh, my eyes just went like, to Serena. And then the logo popped up. I was like, what?
Right. And so, and then Liza Minnelli showed up with Lady Gaga to present the best, you know, picture award. My dad would have been so excited because he was a big Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli and a huge Oscar. He would have been right now, wherever he is, looking down. He is just like, what the hell happened last night? I would have gotten an earful from my dad this morning.
Your dad loves Del Tufo's story with Liza.
Yes, right. But, you know, and so I was on the edge of my seat if Liza was going to read the right name or what have you. For an award show to have that happen is just nuts. I mean, hashtag Oscars so whacked last night. And again, Will Smith, if he's got a problem with Chris Rock, just sit there, just shake your head no, and go seek him out afterwards and say, what is your malfunction? He's lucky Chris Rock didn't hit him back. Actually, some of the still photos have Chris Rock's right hand balled up in a fist.
Yeah, I don't.
He could have hit him back.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, you got a brawl on the stage of the Oscars. It's just like, what are you thinking?
I don't think that would have ended well for Rock. But
I don't know,
it's
man.
It's a horrible look.
Hour number two in the books here on the Rich Eisen Show.